Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. RF Your Refugees Podcast. Dead here, John here. Brian cutting right into the broadcast. I was waiting for the intro to play, but are you doing
the parachute? The parachute did not deploy. We are all dead on impact. It's all right. We're here.
Brian, podcasting. Brian does some incredible stuff. He's got some incredible content coming for you guys,
including we're back on YouTube right now until it explodes. To be determined. We're trying to see if this still works again. So you can watch us anywhere you want.
Yes, on YouTube, on Twitch. Feel free to please chime in. Let us know how it's going. Let us know the audio is going. Check us out both places. You know, obviously Twitch. If you're watching us on Twitch, you got the subscribe button where you can give us some Jeff Bezos money. We always appreciate that. But yeah,
I think people should open two windows and stream both the Twitch and the YouTube at once. Exactly. I think that's the optimal way to watch the show. Exactly. Try that.
Boost those numbers. Welcome in, guys. John, how you doing, my friend? Hope your weekend was splendid.
I think it was. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I watched a lot of soccer. It was pretty fantastic. From that, it was rainy on Saturday, and then Sunday was just El Dia de Football. What about you?
I won't lie. I was kind of excited on Friday because I was like, "There's no Champions Cup. There's no MLS. I can just chill out.
Soccer break.
Play some games. Relax a little bit tonight. I played some Cyberpunk 2077, trying to get to the new expansion pack there, trying to check that out. I was very much enjoying that. And then it was right back into soccer. I did a live watch along. And then I was going to watch Miami Montreal, but I was like, I'm going to take a nap. I'm feeling real. And we got a whole other team that's going to kick off their season. We'll get to that later in the show. But overall, my weekend was good. A lot of soccer on, certainly to watch that. We've got the Messi Circus coming to DC. I won't really experience it here in Lynchburg, but you might experience it a little bit out there in the reaches
in Stafford.
Yeah. I mean, it's close. You're closer. You're physically closer than me. So
I'm gonna see like Messi caravans on 95, just like people honking horns for 40 miles.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. We'll get into that in a little bit about whether he actually plays or not, or what the status is there.
Hopefully, you've all sold your tickets already. Hopefully, your scalp tickets have been scalped already. Is all I'm gonna say.
Yep. All right, let's get into it. Let's start talking. DC. DC United 0-0 draw against FC Cincinnati. Let's start from a result perspective. Great result. No Benteke. No Tecudi Pietro. Pity Pietro was on the bench, apparently did something in training, becoming maybe a little bit of a worrying trend at this point with him. Health was a concern last year I'm not so concerned, but Benteke's 33. He's going to pick up knocks. He's going to pick up injuries. I understand that, but Tecudi Pietro is 22. Having him out and missing games, really stunts this team. So it's certainly a moment for concern, but the team did go out and get a result.
And Benteke has been an Iron Man for this club so far, so that he's had a little bit of a groin situation is one not to be worried about. But I think Ted, following the tradition of other young players who have caught the injury bug early and it took them a while to figure out what they needed to do to stay on the field. So hopefully it was a one-time thing. I think that they were taking precautions. I think when they look at this game that we had and then also the one at home against Miami, I think there's one they want to show for a little bit better. So I think being cautious with your assets is probably a good idea, and it might play out exactly as they hoped.
Yeah, hopefully it does. I certainly would love to have a moment like Montreal had this weekend against Inter Miami. I don't think this was a game that will live in the memories, maybe in Alex Bono's memory because he was fantastic, but I think for the rest of us it's kind of going to be one of those games. It really wasn't a whole lot. It was kind of an ugly game, I think, in most respects. DC really, I really struggle to sort of remember. Like, yes, there were a couple long range chances. I think Click had a nice look from distance. Mural had a nice look from distance. But really, offensively, not a whole lot from this game. And maybe I'm going to kind of bring down the mood. Let me just state the result's great. I think with the injuries and everything like that, vibes are still good. Vibes are still high. I think maybe this game, looking back on it, though, I'm going to have some critiques, particularly, I think, mostly at the front three. I just don't think either one of them really were that good. Front four, I should say. Dahomey, Mural, Hopkins maybe looked a little bit better, but didn't really show much. And obviously, the continued saga of Gabriel Pirani just not looking like a number 10. So
I just want to say on that, everybody, welcome to the bandwagon. You can all have seats in the back. I'm driving the train. That's okay. Yeah, I think there's not a lot to, I mean, we'll walk through the game. There's not a lot to dissect. There's only so much you can talk about in a 0-0 draw. where, you know, shots were at a premium, at least quality chances. I think, you know, there weren't a lot of moments of real danger. I have in here, like, Dahomey is entirely useless back to goal. So they need to really, when they're stuck into a situation, I think we actually, I had a DM during the game from Matt Doyle saying, boy, is it some Galaxy Brain stuff to play two wingers as you're pressing forwards and have Andrew or have Merrill in the back, like in the central midfield. He's like, that's interesting. That's a move. I don't really get it from the standpoint of you can't play the same style when you don't have Benteke, when Dahomey is your option B. He is about a foot and a half shorter. He is a lot less strong. His talents are not that. Dahomey is a winger. That's what he is. Jammed into a number nine, you're gonna get play like you saw. He was not dangerous. This was of, yeah. You know, he was much more dangerous against Portland. And I think FC Cincinnati is just a lot better defensively. So that could be a little bit to do with it. But Pirani is going to be a major conversation point.
Yeah,
I think for us, I think it's going to be a major conversation point for all the fans, and we actually have literal questions about it. So I guess I won't get into it too much. But it's you got to when you lose your top scoring option, you're in trouble. When you lose your top two scoring options, you're in more trouble. When your number 10 is absolutely no threat in any kind of way whatsoever, you've got a really big problem.
Yeah, I mean, let's get into Pirani, and I think I want to get into this question. I think this is from Esberg.
There's a couple of them.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get to Esberg over in Discord. It's like, who would you have it today? Would you take Edison Flores, if you're new to the team, or Gabriel Pirani? I mean, I would still take Gabriel Pirani or Edison Flores. I know, according to you, he's doing pretty well down in Peru.
Very well, exceedingly well.
Yeah, but, you know, I think
more points than he had for DC United in his entire career in five games in Peru.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's doing well. He's home. He's comfortable. I think for him, it was certainly a case of bad timing with COVID and a lot of other sort of bad things with the team and where they were at that point. But either way, I mean, I'd still take Pirani. Pirani doesn't use up that DP slot. Again, I think this was either they take him or they would have lost him. And maybe it was the better move to lose him, but you can never really know. I still think he's going to get a full run out. I still think you're going to see he's going to get put through his paces before the team tries to cut bait. They might not even cut bait till the end of the season, to be honest. This is really just a year to kind of figure things out and see who
he's not blocking anyone.
Yeah.
The way they have built this team, it's not like there's a young player chomping at the bit who's not getting on the field who could take that spot. They didn't. He's the natural 10. Obviously, Ted Cudipietro is one being talked about. Mateus Klik is being talked about as a player that people could see moving higher up the field and being more creative. I don't really think that's where you want to put him. I think where he is right now is where he is most impactful for this. And also, particularly with Canales not playing, a ball winner of that type is good. You need to have one of them on there. And with the passing range, obviously, Peltola has a little bit of that as well. You're taking away Click's best quality to mask a shortcoming in Pirani. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and I think if you put him there, then there's a lot of talk. Canales apparently is close to returning, and I think it was suggested in some circles, well, play Canales and Peltola and then push Click up. Click played a little bit at number 10 when this team started out. Didn't look good. Nope. I think you lose a lot of your effectiveness. Now, again, this team is a little bit of a higher pressing team. Maybe it fits a little bit better, but I just think what he brings in sort of that hybrid eight spot is very much a connection between sort of the back line and, you know, when the ball's moved centrally, when it's moved to the wings, obviously it's going to go through either Santos or Aaron Herrera. But when it's moved down the middle, you need that kind of player who maybe can sort of, you know, hit across both lines. I thought Click honestly should be shouted out. I think of the field players out there, I thought he was one of the best out there. Just kind of winning the ball in good spots, using that transition. I think the reason it didn't stand out as much is because I think the front four just that they really didn't have much in this game.
Herrera also I think performed pretty well, but to your point, Stroud was mostly anonymous, mm-hmm. and he was the player he was hooking up with. He just kept playing the same ball to him, putting him basically at the end line where he had to sort of just like cross it as soon as he could run to the end line, and no one was making runs. I believe Herrera had another, it was either Herrera or Stroud who had a great early cross on the right-hand side, and neither Dahomey or Pirani made any kind of run, and the ball like just rolled across the six. Would have been probably one of the better like highest XG passes or XA passes of the game, and no one bit. So they're still trying to figure it out. This is not a well-oiled machine. Someone made an excuse for Prani, which is still valid, and something we all should keep in mind, is that he is not a player with a full preseason. He was in Brazil the whole time. He's learning a new system with new teammates. And he's young. But someone else said, he's the same age as Ted, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted is managing.
I want to highlight a moment from this game that I think sort of exemplifies maybe part of our frustration with him. I think it did sort of develop maybe into a small chance, but there was a moment when he got the ball and he has maybe an opportunity where he can maybe run at a guy, go take a guy on the dribble. If Ted's in that position, Ted takes that guy on the dribble. He pushes the ball forward. He wants to go forward. And instead, he kind of gets the ball, does a little bit of dribble, maybe beats one guy, and then kind of lays a sort of the high percentage pass over to Click at the time. And then I think that's the one where Click maybe takes a long distance shot, which again, you know, I mean, if that goes in the back of that, he gets an assist.
Right.
But, you know, it's not the type of pass. If I'm Lassane, I'm maybe frustrated because, and I think that's just sort of the frustration with, I think personally with Pirani, it's that you see a skill set, you see some skill set there, you see some dribbling ability. There just doesn't appear to be, either he's afraid to do it or they need to get him to say, look, you know, I'd rather you maybe try to make that pass or make that dribble than, you know, don't. And, you know, we don't get a chance that we really want. So I don't know. I think I'm going to start. We'll see in the next game if he, you know, if he starts or he plays. But I think if Ted is healthy and fully healthy, we saw in the Portland game how good he looked off that dribble. I would really love to see him kind of tried out at that number 10 spot. And maybe
Would you backfill him with? Who would you put up as the other forward?
Other forward as far as the attack?
So on the left wing, who would you put? Would you move Pirani to the left wing?
I think you maybe try to move him there, see what happens.
He played there. He managed there towards the end of the game. Before he was subbed, I think was he subbed off? He didn't go a full 90, right?
Yeah, he was subbed off. He came for on Fletcher. 60th minute, yeah. But so, Fletcher, wow. Well, Fletcher came on. Fletcher came on for, I think Fletcher came on for Hopkins, and then I think actually Antley came in for Pirani, and so it was kind of like there we're locking down the game at that point. I'll have to go back. I'm pretty sure that's what happened because I saw the sub and I was like, Pirani, okay. I was hoping to see Ted. I was like, we need Ted in this game. We need somebody.
What do we think about Ted in the 10 and Fletcher starting from the left wing?
I think that's the direction you're heading once you are out of options as far as like whether you can actually play Pirani or not.
Right. So once Pirani figures out one way or the other what he is, if he figures out that he's not, if that's the deal, then I think that, particularly if you're not making any other moves until the summer, if it happens between now and the window, yeah, I think that's probably maybe what you do. Quasix on our Discord says, what type of players need to be around Pirani for him to have success? I've been thinking about this one and it's really hard because we just don't know really what, you know, it's like bad when someone's like, what's your strong suit? And you're like, well, I don't really know exactly. I don't really know what you do best. So it's hard to say right now. We don't know right now. He is devoid of confidence, which is resulting in a lot of those square balls where you'd be hoping that maybe he would, even drive towards goal. But I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. Maybe ask me again in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Brian Kane dropping from the he has so few touches for a number 10. Yeah. I think we're gonna work on maybe some stats. I think I might commit to in the Miami game if he's out there to like actually like watching him and just kind of seeing. Because I feel like it's a problem, he's invisible. So maybe like paying attention to him for a 90 and seeing kind of how he looks, or maybe I'll go back and watch some of this game. The sun made it very difficult. I was doing the live stream. The sun made it very difficult for me to tell who was who in this field. I think defensively, you know, getting back maybe a little bit to the positives. Obviously we talk about Alex Bono. Question also from Esberg, is or should Bono be the number one? I think at this point, yes. I don't see any reason why Miller comes back healthy.
I have a nitpick.
Oh, you have a nit to pick. Okay.
I do.
Pick that nit.
I'll pick that nit. Shot stopping, I think he's very talented. He's reminding me a little bit of a Bill Hamid from this perspective of his distribution and his handling of the ball under pressure is not super great. Tyler Miller's, we're going to put the whole getting chipped that was
won't tactics. Have to do that this time around.
He won't have to do that. As you notice, Bono is not running up and down the field, so that's out. But his distribution was very, very good. He was very calm on the ball, always. This is, I'm talking about Tyler Miller. You can look back. There was, I don't have it written down what minute it was in the first half where he got put under pressure, and he basically sliced the ball up in the air, like up in the air 20 feet and 5 feet forward. And if not for a little bit of a lucky clearance by DC United, it would have been 1-0 right then. I looked at his stats earlier to look at his pass completion on long balls. It was like 10% or 12% or 15%. Yeah. It was very low. Not connecting. Obviously he's being told to play the ball long, particularly in that game, in the game state that they were in. But I would like to see that improve before I say, like, yeah, he's a number one. We don't need to look anywhere else. He's got the shot stopping down. And like this team, it's always going to be a benefit to have a guy that can pull a rabbit out of a hat if you're on those days where you can't generate chances. And this was one of those. So I would say he is for now, but it's not written in stone for me.
I would say until you see something that, you know, and maybe, you know, again, maybe we see Miller get a run out. I would have said maybe you see him come out for like an open cup game and you see how that looks. But we're not competing in that. So neither here nor
also,
there.
Also coming back from a rotator cuff for a goalie is probably not an insignificant challenge. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how long it takes him to finally fully recover. I don't remember what FootMob says. I don't think it might have been June. Not sure. It'll be a while.
I think it sounds like he's pretty much locked up. But Bono made two great saves. I think
44th minute. I have it even written 44th minute on Corey Baird and 84th minute on
Papenza.
Papenza. That was, I think it was a good save in that he made it right. But as he dove, he got it shot into his thighs basically from where he was diving. So it wasn't like a full stretch, but it was just like it should have been converted. I think it was like a 2xG chance from where he was sitting, and he couldn't convert it. So you got to make the saves. He made the save.
My goalkeeper coach, when I was very young, used to say, "Is like when you're in the game, doesn't matter. Make the save. It's all that matters. It's all that people talk about. You can worry about form. You can worry about where it is. You make the save. No one cares." I did want to highlight. Obviously, I think Christopher McVay had a great game. I thought they did.
Too bad he destroyed Lucas Bartlett and required him to be substituted.
That's something to watch for this team. I think we're seeing the beginnings of sort of the injuries piling up and concerns about depth. I got very worried when Bartlett was not looking healthy and then they subbed on Akinboni. Not that I don't think Akinboni is a good player. I was just like, this is like not a good situation. He's got to be on it. And he was, I can't recall really having much to do in this game. And
he didn't.
Yeah. So it wasn't too much from there. I want to shout out Santos a little bit. I think he was pretty solid defensively. I feel like this was like an improved, wasn't too much that happened in this game that I can recall where there was like, there was a miss on the left side, or he got beat from the left side. The team really, all the chances really kind of came up from like the middle of the field. I feel like there wasn't a lot that was happening from that wing spot. So, and also Aaron Herrera, again, we talked about solid.
Yeah, man, I am so happy with that signing. That was, I think we were a bit concerned about the amount of allocation money that went along with that move to Rouen is playing now for Montreal every game. He was a part of a victory in Miami, but it was kind of worried. Like he went from RSL where he was at the top of his game to Vancouver where it didn't work out at all. And you were just kind of wondering what you were going to get. Did he go to Vancouver? He was in Montreal, not Vancouver, right?
He was in Montreal, yes.
Montreal, I apologize. And it was sort of a mixed outcome. So I was concerned which player we were getting. He's looked great. I mean, I'm going to lose money every week betting on any time assist for him because he is the danger function. If you get Benteke back in there, he's kind of easy money. But Akinboni, by the way, I just looked at his stats, 22 minutes, 5 for 5 passes, 1 for 1 long balls, 1 interception and no other stats. So he really didn't have anything to do at all. 6 touches the whole 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We were pressing forward at that point anyway, too.
Yeah. Really, really kind of forcing middle. I also thought Petola had a good game. I mean, need to start with this. I'm pretty sure when he announced it, it's Petola, but people keep saying Petola. So
I think we're fine. I think that one seems a coin flip. But producer Brian, love this. Feeding us the stats during the game. Peltola is leading the league in tackles right now.
Yeah.
Which is not something my eyes would have told me, to be honest with you. He says he's much more of a standing tackle guy than a crunching tackle kind of guy. Yeah. He is also transparent when he's wearing the white jersey. So you'll have to keep your eyes on the blurring white blob in the middle of the field. You'll find out where he is.
Hopefully the sun won't be too bad and we can actually see the numbers on the back. That was my biggest struggle here. By the way, 13 of 16 on ground duels run, according to FootMob on him. So he is...
He's the standing tackle master, man. Yeah. That's great.
5 of 8 tackles. I thought he was solid this game. I thought he was, again, just showing, I think, just being that sort of number six destroyer in the box. It's only going to get better from him, I think, and really, really happy with this signing. I think he has been worth the young designated player spot, especially if we can then use it to parlay it into two other, you know, talented U22 slots. I think he's been excellent.
So I have the sub patterns here. It was Stroud for Fletcher in the 58th, Antley and Akinboni for Bartlett and Pirani in the 67th, and then Hopkins for Murrell in the 77th.
Yeah. What do we think of Jacob Murrell? I thought there were some moments. What I liked about Murrell and kind of why I want to see him in that kind of number nine spot as opposed to like a Dahomey is that he shoots. I feel like he was the one out there. He was one actually trying to take some shots and take some moments. And I think there was one moment they had where I think they got the ball out wide. I believe it was Santos out wide. He cuts in, tries to play a crossover to Fletcher, and Fletcher kind of mishandles it a little bit. I'm just like, man, you know, we really need some guys who can shoot and who can put themselves in spots and kind of be ready for the ball. So
I like him because he's physical and he bangs. And if you have a team built around Christian Benteke, when he's not on the field, it's a lot easier to find someone that can give you 60% of a Benteke than it is to put a player that can give you 0% of Benteke and try to do something different. I think particularly early in the season, it's a lot harder. And I think it will be the entire time. It will be always, obviously, with this roster, honestly, because there's not a creative number 10. Mm-hmm. There's not speedy wingers that are goal threats the way this roster is set up. You need Benteke on the field. So your plan B should be as close to your plan A as possible. And he seems, you know, like you said, FootMob killed him. FootMob gave him a 6-1. And I think he had three shots. He had the most shots on DC United for the entire team in 22 minutes played. So what does that tell? It's something that he's going to push himself for time. That's what Hopkins did a long time ago when Rooney was trying to put him out there. I think actually it was Lasada who gave him his first start as he got fired. But he was a player that was taking his shots, and that's what we were looking for because no one was really creating. So I think, you know, players get it. You're not going to score unless you shoot. Ted Cudipietro, all the young guys. Griffin Yao used to do it. Christian Fletcher, not so much. He's a little bit more, not necessarily conservative, but maybe patient. And mm-hmm. looking for, and that's probably coaches will probably like that a little bit better anyway, a little more dependable. But there's a question about him. I think it kind of fits right into this. Given Lassane's comments regarding Fletcher's consistency versus skill, I don't think he'll be a starter this spring. Maybe he will break in this summer. Thoughts? I guess, was this in the post game conference? I missed it.
I listened to it. I didn't quite catch this part, but maybe.
Okay. Maybe it said somewhere else.
Maybe it was the pre-match. I think he did talk a little bit about him in the pre-match.
I think, you know, I think that there's, when you go up and down the roster and you think about other potential spots, the first thing that I'm thinking of, Jared Stroud shouldn't keep anybody off the field. He's fine. He's a good MLS player. Game one, he looked like a world beater. Games two and three on the road, I've been not very impressed with him. So
I think there were some like, oh, this is new. This is not a player we've seen before. This looks refreshing. And then it's kind of been the same beat. Other teams may be prepared for it a little bit. You know, obviously also two, you know, tougher games on the road than there are at home.
Yeah.
I want to see maybe a little bit, you know, this has been a tough stretch. I think this team had, and I think it's going to be a tough game against Miami. I think once we start getting into more of the rhythm, maybe
I just wanted to see what comes next after that. St. Louis, Montreal, Columbus, Orlando are the next four games. St. Louis is a game that I would like to see us at.
Mm-hmm.
None of the rest of them. Well, and then Orlando is 0-2-1, so maybe them too.
Yeah, but they got Champions League, so they're going to be coming off of that. Columbus is good. Columbus is going to be a tough game.
Yeah, that's if we can manage a draw out of that, you should be dancing again. But I wanted to finish that point is that players like Jared Stroud should not keep you from getting players like Christian Fletcher in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we need to talk about quickly is as we are moving towards the summer window, and you have a Martin Rodriguez who has not played a minute on the field. He's healthy. He's in the 18. You're not playing him whatsoever. And you have Mahana Giazzi still, who is just not going to play. You've got to, you cannot allow yourself to carry both of the, particularly if you can't find a landing spot for Giazzi, you can't carry both of these dead weight roster spots, two international spots, major cap room,
massive
cap room in positions that you need cover. You cannot hold the bag on these two players for the entire season. You can't do it. So if there is an opportunity to get any relief with Martin Rodriguez, selling him back to Colo Colo, finding something else. He obviously is not in the picture. You're looking at players with no major league soccer, no professional experience that are getting in over him and playing minutes. Something is not right there. That's, I mean, not a surprise coming off of an ACL injury, very possible. But if you can get any salary cap relief from him and roster spot relief from an international spot, you do it. And Jaz, you got to buy him out. He doesn't want to be here. It's very clear that Troy is not going to put a player on the field who's not committed. He tried to get a move. It didn't pan out back to Sweden. It's going to suck to write that check and let him leave. But this is a huge anchor around the neck of a guy trying to build a club. And if you give him this out, then he's got a lot more money to work with, two international spots, and can go and try to make his team better in the interim, because it's just too much. It's like a big chunk of the roster from a salary cap perspective.
I think the biggest fear I have is Yaz. I think you buy out. You obviously have one contract buyout. I think I agree with you on Mahana Yaz. Buy him out. My biggest concern with trying to parlay or get rid of Martin Rodriguez is that the salary that we're paying Martin Rodriguez, probably he will not be able to get that.
He may be happy to sit and collect a check if he wants.
Look, this is I'm not going to get a bigger contract than this at this point. At this point, I'm really not with both those players. I think Yaz buyout. I think you do that. If he's not going to be on the field, buy him out. With Martin Rodriguez, I think it's also for me. I'm kind of like, well, he's still on the bench. I would rather be seeing Hopkins and Fletcher and all these young guys coming out than seeing him. You know, if he sits on the bench for a year, again, what is this year about? This year is about doing these things right now. I think he will get some appearances. I think eventually the depth is going to run out, where maybe we get to the summer and suddenly it's like, hey, you know, we're sitting pretty right now. We're, you know, fifth, sixth in the East. Maybe we can make a run. Maybe you give him a couple runs and see what he can do. And then maybe look for something.
I think I just bought the hype. I think fans were thinking like, all right, he's going to come back and his hair is going to be on fire. And I just don't, that seems to be not what the deal is. Yeah. And we, to your point, we want those young players on the field. And also to your point, he doesn't have a lot of value right now. I think you're right. I think we're just stuck on him.
Yeah. I think he will finish out the year and then it'll be bye-bye.
All right. Then Jaz, get him out of here.
Jaz is the one problem because he is technically on two more years of his contract.
How does that buyout work?
What's that?
How does that buyout work?
I think you got to pay that whole contract.
I don't care. It's not my money. Get rid of him. Like, I don't want him. Give me a left back.
We'll see what happens here. I think I think Yaz will be the real first big test, I think, for Mekhi, as far as cutting dead weight, because we saw this team carry dead weight year after year. I mean, also too, I mean, maybe you go the maybe we go the not registering route. That would be
the rabble.
The raffle, that would be interesting for sure. I think with him, he would much more like to find a new place to play. But
me too, I would love that for him as well.
Yeah,
not much more to say about the game. I really at all. This game against Miami is really where the proof will be in the pudding. Let's talk about that. So Miami has its, was that its home opener too, or did they open at home the first
they
season?
They opened at home against RSL on like that Wednesday, that weird
you're right
game.
So this is the second game at home here against Montreal, and Messi. First we heard Messi was injured in Champions Cup, then afterwards we heard it was resting. Tata Martino said this was my plan all along. I had to rest him eventually. I'm resting him here. This is the game we picked. Which tells me that he's going to play against Nashville on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think he plays. I'm not sure. Maybe he doesn't start, but I think he makes an appearance. I think there is
in Nashville or DC.
DC.
I think so too.
I think there is more pressure. I think they are actually going to look at these home games as these are our moments where we can rest him, because there's 15, 16 other times that people can come see him play. And if we've got schedule congestion, that's the game we're going to choose. The road games, I mean, and you can argue about how Mickey Mouse this looks, but the road games are where if Messi is not there, it becomes a story that he is not. It's not a story when he's not in Miami. When he's not in Miami, maybe it's a little bit of a story, but it's not near the story when the one moment he goes out to a city and he's not playing, then it becomes a story. And I think the team wants to avoid the Hong Kong situation. Even if it wouldn't be as bad, they want to avoid that situation at
all. The Hong Kong debacle.
Yeah.
So in this game against Montreal, Busquets started on the bench. Luis Suarez started on the bench. And I think Jordi Alba came from the start.
Possibly.
He might have gone 90.
Look,
he was good. Jordi Alba I think that was the second goal of the game. Leo Campana scored the first one, and then Jordi Alba equalized for like 5 seconds. It was kind of a wild second half, back and forth. But the important thing to look at here is what happens against Nashville. What was the score in the first? Is it two legs, or are they in group play?
It's 2-2. So it's a two leg. So it was 2-2. Nashville didn't go for the head. They were rolling in that game. Schaffelberg scoring like the best goals of like the entire MLS week in CONCACAF, though a lot of 0-0 and kind of dreary type first leg games. And Nashville and
that was in Tennessee. Also, the first leg was in
that
Tennessee.
That was in Nashville too. So two away goals for Miami that really Nashville could ill afford to give up. But I use the Thanos meme. You should have gone for the head. They really should have buried that team, and they left it hanging. And when you got Messi and you got a huge amount of talent, it doesn't matter how bad it looks, they can turn it on a head. And that's something for DC to consider. I think you watch that Nashville game. Miami did not look good, I would say, for about 80 minutes of that game. But I think they kind of are playing a varied game where I think they know this is what we have to do. And, you know, they make adjustments very quickly, and they've got the talent to do it. They're still an incredibly, incredibly talented team.
It is wild the difference in danger and also in confidence that they had when they had almost all of their stars on the field. In that last 15 minutes, they looked exceedingly dangerous. So I think he probably plays. I bet he starts in Nashville, plays 60 minutes, depending on the game. He might even go longer than that, to be honest with you. He might go most of the game.
I think that'll definitely be a game state type of thing. If they are up 2-0 or up 3-0, you know, by halftime, I think they will look to maybe try to bury that game early. You get a couple goals, you kind of bury that game early.
As opposed to that, was that the RSL game where they were up 3-0 at halftime, or was that the second game of the season?
I think that was the Orlando game is probably what you're
thinking. It was the Orlando game. And I was like, you're worried about fixture congestion and these tired legs, and you're keeping all these stars through like the middle of the second half. Like, all right, well, no one's going to cry for you later. And I'm not. No one is crying. I think that's still the case. So if you're a DC United fan, you're probably going to see some of Messi. And I hope we don't see too much of it, because I think that their offense is a lot more dangerous. They are running downhill when they have all those players in the field. Lucas Bartlett, rest up. Get in the cold spa. Make sure you're ready to go.
Yeah, I was nervous about them. I was like, oh my gosh, we have Matei Akinbone. I think that might wreck his confidence to have to go up against Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi and Jordi Alba and Busquets.
Good luck. But also to think here, guys, we did not five points were not in our brains coming into Inter. I think we both talked about it. That was not on deck. So if this goes badly, it's entirely possible it does. If it does, you know, that's okay. Roll it over. You got St. Louis next week. And that's a super winnable game, and you don't have any, you know, all-time greats or just like you're not going to have
game to St. Louis. It's not exactly an easy road game, so.
It isn't, but also this DC game might feel like a road game too, to be honest. So there's that as well.
Yeah.
We got some more questions when I work through those as well.
Sure.
Frank Itzo says DC United maybe got lucky on some of the Cincinnati chances late in the game, but how much credit did the defense deserve for shutting down, blocking, and intercepting the ball to prevent Cincinnati's attack?
I mean, they're the reason this game. I thought they did, particularly I would say about the first most of the first half, and then I think a little bit I think Lassane talks about this. They did kind of lose their shape a little bit. I think their defensive structure was really good. I think they were able to transition those chances. I think the issue, I mean, it was great. They got out with a point. The issue with this team is always going to be, they're still going to leak goals. There's still going to be goals to opportunities. But when they have those chances right now, the system is getting them points right now. The way Lassane has this team set up is what's getting them the points. The individual performances, particularly in this game, were not there. The individual performances for, I would say, 80 minutes of Portland were not there. Everything was there against New England. They played excellent in a lot of states, but they also missed a lot of chances too. So this team is going to be playing a little bit on a knife's edge, particularly defensively. So, and if they don't convert their chances, this game could have easily gone, you know, could be 2-0 Cincinnati, and we're maybe having a little less positive things to say
coming to the Miami game. Mario Aguilar, who I believe is a Patreon subscriber because I just mailed him out some stickers today. I'm not seeing the initial hype around Peltola. What did you expect from him going into the season, and has he lived up to those expectations? Well, we just said that he leads the league in tackles, so that's been good. Ted, you're the one who wrote the article. What were you expecting, and has he been sort of what you thought he was going
to
be?
I mean, I was expecting maybe the defensive play to be there. I'm really not sure when you're talking about a number six. I mean, what are you expecting to see? I don't know. I'm just Hero. Like, I hear that, and I'm just like, are people just like not, are people just kind of watching the front three of the game? And I'm not I'm sure you're watching the games, but I don't know. I feel like, I just feel like the tackles, the work rate sort of in the defensive third, I think he has showcased some sort of light dribbling moves. He's not going to be a Andy Nahar where he's going to deke three guys, but what he's going to do is make a light touch, push the ball into space. I think we've seen a lot of those types of smart plays. So I think he's been excellent, to be honest.
You struggle when you are a number six designated player, even though it's a young DP, and sort of being touted as the one major signing of the offseason, which it was. Mm-hmm. And he's understated. We talked about sort of his game is you're not going to see him really just, you know, break lines over and over again. He's not going to be crushing people in the tackle. He's just going to win the ball back and then move it back along. And that's kind of what you need. But I can understand people sort of not seeing that. And he's not standing out unless you're really looking for him. Arnolito says, I think it's the way he plays. He looks kind of lazy. That's been a lot of players sort of like, that's happened to a lot of players over the eras. And I think too, I talked about it the first two games and I thought it improved in this game, is that he's a slow to react to pressure. It didn't bite him in the back too many times. He was able to move the ball around, but it always seemed like it was just a little bit late than he should have recognized it. But I thought in Cincinnati, he did really well with that. So getting better again, he's had some time off.
And I think maybe there's a miss of sort of expectations. The fact that you look at him as the number signing, so you're expecting like this completed product. Yeah. And I don't think that's what he is right now. I think he is a guy who is incredibly talented. I think the way I look at him is, what am I seeing from him that I also see from Russell Canales? And I see a lot of similar things, a lot of really good things. And I look at the fact that he is 22. So it's something that you expect to grow. You expect to get better as he gets more comfortable in the league, as he gets more comfortable reading different teams, you know, since he come back to play against DC, you know, he will have some familiarity. He will know maybe areas to attack. And that's part of what a smart player does. So I think maybe what you're seeing, slow to react, things like that, is also because he doesn't know the league. He's never played outside of Finland. And those things come with familiarity, especially as a number six, where your job is to sort of anticipate those types of plays to prevent pressure and prevent, you know, opportunities. So I think that's going to come as he learns the league.
I wanted to also spotlight, we didn't talk about this beforehand, but in the post-game article from Steve Goff, we were talking about Benteke not being available and being injured. So apparently from this article, he says, Benteke did not travel on the team charter Saturday, but to the surprise of everyone, he bought his own ticket and was waiting on the team bus Sunday when the players boarded before the match. That rules. That's very, very cool of him to do. I don't know if he would have done that if the game was in Vancouver, but I'm glad that he was able to hop over to Ohio and surprise his team, give him a little bit of a lift. That is a veteran. I mean, that is not what you expect out of anybody, much less your superstar designated player who could be anywhere doing anything. So that rules.
buy or sell this, but Teke has been the best designated player for DC United.
Buy.
I would go buy.
Smash. I think
Luciano, Luciano Emilio technically was one of the club's first DPs. He did not, he was good, not on a DP contract, and then he got a DP contract and he wasn't very good. But he would maybe be the other argument there. Again, Acosta, not a DP that has been pointed out for us, not a DP for DC United. But honestly, Benteke, I mean, Wayne Rooney obviously had like a good half season. 2019 was kind of, it was good. He was certainly there. I think what we're seeing from Benteke, again, you talk about that's something I didn't know about him and maybe we didn't see it broadcasted much last year. Maybe the situation with Rooney, you know, maybe didn't feel engaged. And so
maybe he needs a vibes coach. Maybe Benteke like thrives in like a positive atmosphere, which
if this wasn't here last year, and then you've gotten that out of Benteke, who's on the last year of his contract, like, holy crap, we might have like an incredibly good coach in Lassane that he's been able to do that. Cause I Benteke could have very easily been like, this is my last year. I'm out of here play and, you know, sign my contract, but you know, I'll be gone. I know I'll be gone, but he seems like he's making a case how he wants to stay. So
I'm going to go to Miami instead of, since I can't be here for the game, I'm going to go get away for a weekend. That's easier to do. I was just going to say, like, if you look back to quotes that Pablo got out of him when he got here, talking about how he wanted to, for the first time, make a move that he wanted to make. And he sort of talked with like a very, nuanced and complicated, not necessarily complicated, but like emotionally adept way of knowing himself and knowing what's good for him and what he wanted. So it would not surprise me in the very least if he found for the first, maybe the first time in his career, I don't have the full coaching docket of teams he's been coached by. But I don't think hasn't had a Troy, a coach that's sort of set up for like that. Not to say like, not like from a tactical standpoint, but from a man, like from like a warm and fuzzy, build the camaraderie in that style. I don't know.
I think Jurgen Klopp would maybe like a word, but
how long was he at Liverpool?
He was at Liverpool for, I think, a year or so. I can't remember how long it was.
And then he was gone. So apparently it did not vibe.
But also I think it's an incredibly tough team to stay at the top. And that was a team too, that was, he was early on sort of in the rebuilding process for Liverpool. And then, you know, they've developed, it takes some time to kind of develop all of that, but
maybe Klopp's gotten some lessons from New Mexico United. Maybe he like watched some games, saw him on the sideline.
Maybe entirely possible.
Maybe Kevin Case on Twitter says, we kind of got into this, but I want to make sure if you get us a question, we're going to read it.
Yeah.
Kevin Case, Case Closed on Twitter says, how many games does Pirani get to find his form before Troy stops starting him? Alternatively, how many games should he get? So we kind of talked about this. There's not really a ready-made replacement. There's not really a hurry to get rid of him. He's on decent money, but it's not hamstringing you like other players that are not playing right now that are costing us a lot more money. I think he gets to the summer. I think you keep playing him, maybe give him a rest here or there if he's showing fatigue. But you just keep on rolling him out there and see if you can figure out what he needs.
I totally missed the name. I was about to wait for you to stop. I totally missed the name of which player you were talking about.
Pirani.
Pirani. I kind of guessed it, but yeah.
All of our questions mostly are about Pirani sucking right now, which is, again,
and for the first time, like, the color commentator was ripping.
She was ripping him apart. Horrible. He if he goes back and watches that, he's gonna be a little bit like, hey, we all were bad. Hey, what's going on? Yeah. Brendan Cartwright, friend of the show and best tweeter on the planet, says, has Tyler Miller moved into the Mohana Jazz Martin Rodriguez zone in terms of the front offices? Can't wait to move this guy rankings. I don't think so. Not yet.
Yeah. But
Albano is also on such a low salary that his and Miller's salary combined makes a normal number one. So I don't think that's really, I think this club would be like, sweet, we got the best goal tandem potentially in the league. We got a great one and two.
I think we'll see Miller get a run out at some point this year. I think you'll see him get a game or two. I mean, obviously, I think he's injured. Like you said, his injury situation is pretty bad. He probably won't be back for a little while. I think like you talked about, I mean, distribution. I mean, I think also it seems to me, you know, the game plan was play the ball up top, try to win it. If you don't, then just be there to pressure, was kind of the game plan. So I think that maybe is contributing a little bit. You know, I think if you see some more quick distribution, maybe some different type of ideas, maybe gets a little better. Maybe his numbers shoot up when you've got Christian Benteke winning those. You basically just got to get it up to him. So worth watching. I think you have a fair point of distribution. I also think Sinner, it's that for goalkeeper, because the goalkeeper's number one job is to stop the ball from going in the back of the net. So,
and he's pretty good at that.
Yeah, very good at that. That it for DC questions.
That's it.
I would say you did have one thing you wanted to drop about. By the way, if you haven't been listening, we had a guest on the show. Go ahead.
Laurel Failer was the FC Cincinnati beat. She covers the FC for Queen City Press, formerly of The Athletic. Mm-hmm. Found out that she got her credential banned.
Suspended
for 2 weeks. I think it was two weeks or maybe 3 weeks.
2 weeks.
Right after she was on our show. I can promise you it was not about being on our show. That was not the reason why. she's been, you know, pretty quiet about what's going on about that. I don't want to talk too much about that, but it's very cool to see. It's horrible to see that this is a pattern here in the league where the league cannot tolerate negative press. They don't understand that without supporter run or privately financed journalism, there's going to be no one talking about your league at all. It's just not going to happen. There's one outlet in Cincinnati that covers it. That's not sort of supported in that way. Cincy Soccer Talk is a privately funded organization. They do their own thing. But if you ice these groups out, you're going to realize how little you matter to your town. It's the noise will diminish greatly around it. That's known. When we talked about that, you know about our situation. But all the cool thing is the official radio station, like the flagship station of FC Cincinnati, has said that they will refuse to speak about the club until she is reinstated. So I love the solidarity there. Yeah. But also, you know, you and I are both now part of North American Soccer Reporters. You have seen a bunch of people league wide have this happen to them, where front offices and PR staffs have cracked down on access. And, you know, we'll see in the long run what it does to league interest, but it's certainly not going to help grow it. Messi's not going to be here forever. And particularly if Apple TV is not going to produce any more content and they're just going to ride the Messi train till it falls off. Good luck, man. I think this is a time to embrace additional voices, that even if it's a little messy and you can't control it, it's the only way to really provide that sort of spark for growth, because, you know.
And you brought up the Messi and you brought up Apple TV. And I just wanted to say the content. It's bad. I actually noticed today, like the MLS, remember they used to do like a weekly review show? That's gone. That they haven't done a new one for that. I got really frustrated. MLS wrap up doesn't actually wrap up all of the games. They actually
just one day of the week.
They did not talk about. Well, they don't even wrap up all the games on Saturday. They did not talk at all about the DC Portland game on the last show. And yeah, it's a late finish. I remember when this first came out. First week was great, and we're like, hey, this is only going to get better. And it has been incredibly sad and incredibly disappointing. It's like this league signed Messi, and it's like we have to cash in on Messi. So we got to cut costs down to like maximize that profit. I think once Messi's gone, I think maybe you see some of that stuff tick up, or Apple loses interest and we're back to, you know, hunting around ESPN or some other channels. We'll see what they still have the quote unquote, the Drive to Survive for MLS version documentary coming out. Maybe that went some people back, but I mean, overall,
isn't that going to be focused on Messi?
It's supposed to be league wide. It's supposed to be a league wide show. So we'll, and you know, again, you know, the Drive to Survive doesn't do, you know, they kind of follow if they are given, I think the big question is if they are given the access, giving them the access, allowing some of these, and we're seeing how, you know, they don't like stories that are being written about it. They're being told to talk in again, the whole story about, you know, well, the people who work for MLS are not allowed to talk about
this. People may not know about this if they're not super online.
Yeah. The replacement referees.
Talk about it.
They've been bad. I mean, they've been bad. And if you are just mad about the fact that your defender was an idiot and went into the press box and PRSA released a statement supporting the referees, and you're just decided you're mad and you want to, you know, wax poetic about how good the replacement refs are because you're just mad about that, then go ahead. Be that person. I think you're an idiot and I don't like you. that's just straight up. I hate it. I think it's awful. And the referees have been bad. This game particularly, I thought that there was some losing control. There have been several moments where it just looks like the players are just kind of like, there's not really good match control in any of these games.
None.
And it's just...
I had read, and I don't know how true it is, they were saying how it appeared that some of these referees were calling by, not by radio, but like the like pro officials, particularly with stuff with instant replay, where they're almost being directed by other referees off the field. Because to your point, there is no crowd control. These players also know there's a lack of respect for these folks at all. They're just like, you're dumb. This offside is going to be overturned. Just go to the stupid videotape. You're wrong again. And, you know, they're trying to do their best to like control things, but the wheels are off the wagon. It's not good. But the thing I wanted to make sure you comment on was that I thought you were going with was the fact that Apple TV, because again, this is all very centralized, got a league-wide memo saying, hey, stop talking about the referees. You can mention it in passing in the pregame, but
you can talk about how a call is bad and how it's a mistake, but you can't
allude to the fact that why that might be the case.
Yeah. And it's, you know, to me, that's kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a story. It's certainly a story that should be out there. It's certainly something out there. I get it. I know why they're doing it. Like, it's controlled by the league at this point. I think there's plenty of other media talking about how bad this situation is. It does not look there. I am shocked about how long this is taking. I am very surprised. I don't think there has been a moment. There was one potential moment in the Atlanta-New England game where the referee blew the whistle for a PK right as Atlanta was scoring. If that PK had gotten saved and that game had flipped on its head and gone the other direction, that could have been a moment. There have been very close calls. There was an overturned yellow card. There hasn't been, I think, something so horribly awful, other than, I guess, the missed throw in. But even that's a little bit like I'm talking about. There is something that is that there's something that actually turns a game where it happens on the play. I think that's what you need, because even the throw in situation, you could say, well, SKC didn't do a good job defending. Like, yeah, moments like that are going to happen. I think like a moment like that, where literally a goal is taken away and the penalty is saved, that would have been just a catastrophic type of moment. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen if the league does not, they are playing with fire every single weekend that they do not bring these referees back in. There's going to be some type of major calamitous moment that's going to get coverage everywhere about how bad it is. So,
and as it came out today, Pro and PRSA are not involved in any negotiations, no meeting planned with the league. So that's a bad sign. That's, you usually want people talking to each other across the table if you're going to find progress. And I think Roach made this point on Twitter. He's like, the problem here, you normally ice people out to get them back to the table, but a lot of these people have day jobs and they want to be refereeing, but they're not on breadlines right now.
Yeah.
They're able to live their life pretty much, maybe not exactly the same as before, but this is not the same as a normal lockout. So it could go on for a while.
Yeah, and I think Pro was like, well, we're going to make the deal worse, which, again, I don't know how that violates. There's good some terms about negotiating. It's going to get – yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a situation that's going to get worse. I think Pro is seeing – I think finally the problem it was in 2014 is I'm not sure how visible it was that there really was a difference. This time I think you could absolutely tell there is a difference, and there is a profound lack of respect from the officials and the players. They don't have control of this game, and there's going to be, I think if this continues, there's going to be a flashpoint moment. Whether that actually, I mean, MLS seems very hinged on the fact that, you know, they are just going to keep full steam ahead. I mean, talk about just from PR and everything, it's just been an absolute disaster.
We wish nothing upon Messi, but imagine Messi getting injured in a situation where referees did not protect the player in the way that they normally would. Imagine the worldwide condemnation that would come MLS's way. It would be, any positive that they would have gotten from Messi coming would be wiped out in one weekend. So hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen either. So we've gone a little long on DC United, but that's because, you know, there's a lot to talk about. The Spirit are finally getting underway. Right tonight, in fact, as we're taping, they had a really, really cool open house event, something I wish DC United would do, where they had open training in the stadium, unveiled new merch, had players signing, which we're about to talk about, had availability for the media with all the folks because they've been in preseason in California and in Florida until very recently. So this was like their first chance to sort of be in front of their fans. And it looked really cool. I wish they could have gone. It seemed like it was a really good event. And again, DC United, take notes.
Yeah. Don't go to certain places that maybe you shouldn't go. That will have impact on your fans. Saturday starts Sunday. They'll be on the road against Seattle. I was going to look at that. They do have a they have a local rights deal. So something again that
Monumental, which has broadcast the team before, I think, maybe 3 years ago. But now it's also available on streaming. NWSL Plus is free. So there's a good chance to see most of the games all year round. There might be a couple that you may need some shoulder subscriptions for, but yeah, for the most, because they're not covering every single home game. Monumental has most of them.
Yeah. Well, they're covering, I think, all the games that are not on CBS, Amazon Prime, ESPN, like all the games that are sort of on this exclusive networks, the games that are on would be on the NWSL Plus service. So, you know, you don't have to, that service is free for now, but I think for a year, I think eventually it's going to go up a little bit. There's certainly going to be a price attached to it. But some news dropped from Mark Kerkorian is that they will apparently be signing a player. International player comes out. So interesting with that. Not much news from a roster perspective. They did announce their rookie contracts. Bethune will have a 3-year contract with an option for 25. Mail, Hirschfeld, 3 years. Windsor, 3 years. Morris is on a 1-year contract. Courtney Bro is on a 3-year contract. Stainbrook, 3-year contract. So they're most, with the exception of Morris, most of the players from their draft. And then I think it was Pajil. One of their draft picks, apparently still recovering from an injury. So
injury in the college season, I believe.
Yeah. So
Corey Bethune is the player that you are looking to most hopefully contribute quickly with the loss of Ashley Sanchez.
She'll get a run out for sure.
We have had no preseason availability. We've not seen any games. We've not seen any write-ups. We don't know any scores that have occurred. So if you thought making NWSL predictions was hard before, it is solely based on roster moves. And if you're looking at the Spirit roster right now and saying, are we better than we were last year when we did not make the playoffs? Hard to say yes.
Yeah.
Hard to say yes. Casey Kruger, although she played, you know, and we'll talk about what happened on the weekend against Brazil. It's great to have her there. I think that strengthens the right back position. I don't know. We'll see.
It's certainly going to be a team. I mean, this is like a rebuild question mark for this team. Is this team rebuilding? Are they not? I think it's hard to imagine we'd be here. I mean, I'm thinking about trying to write a preview for this team, which I think is going to be difficult. I'm just like, I mean, it's hard to believe we would be here after 2021. I think we all thought that was the beginning of something like really special for this team. And the fact that we're kind of here almost talking about whether this is a rebuild or not, I think they'll be good. I think this team is maybe rough to start the year, but I think they're going to try to target that summer window. Coach is going to be back. Maybe there are going to be some players from his teams that are going to want to come. Yeah. They're going to get some signings in.
I talked about the additions, and to not say that you've just hired Jonathan Giraldez from Barcelona is probably a major injustice to what they're operating on. So I want to make sure I remedy that. The new coaching staff, highly desired coaching staff, probably one of the most sought after coaches in the women's game. After Emma Hayes has already taken a job for U.S. national team, he was probably the number one name on everyone's lips. So we'll see. Is this international player that's been teased going to be a player from Barcelona, a player of a major stature and caliber? I think that's the right move. This team needs to sort of reinvigorate their intention with their players. Ashley Hatch got a 3-year contract extension. Trinity Rodman's still here. Andy Sullivan's still here. Aubrey Bledsoe is still here. Aubrey Kingsbury is still here.
Yeah.
But, you know, for whatever reason, I think if you're looking at this club and saying, yeah, but what did Gotham do this offseason?
Signed everybody from free agency.
Signed everybody. What, you know, how's San Diego looking this year? Like, there are new teams on the block. And you got to stay relevant. And you got to stay current. And all you've done so far from that perspective is trade your number 10 or your number 2, Ashley Sanchez, to North Carolina, who I bet is going to crush down there. And, you know, it's all to be done. So make a big splash. And then I think the vibes were going to be returning back in a positive way.
Pay a transfer fee. Go out. I mean,
your transfer. You were going to spend $500,000 just to get your coach early out of Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Like, spend, you're the money is there, clearly. Go spend it on players.
I mean, this is something that's been talked about. You know, transfer fees have not been a big thing. I think there was a record broken for a transfer fee. I think Bay FC did it for a player. They broke a record as far as a paying out a transfer fee. That's the direction that I guarantee the women's game is going to start to go. There's going to be a lot more of those. It's probably going to rise very quickly. You have talked a big game about how you want to make, what you want to make this team. That's some things you got to go out and do.
To follow that up, that's Rachel Kundanagi, who played for Real Madrid or Madrid. Mm-hmm. The max fee in the world for a women's player is $787,000 in February. So, like I said, I think they were going to pay $500,000 to get Geraldes out of his contract. So the money's in those couch cushions. This is a chance. Flex on some. Because I don't think in NWSL, I'm not sure transfer fees are factored in the way they are in MLS, amortized over the length of the contract. I'm not sure. But if they're not, that's just money to spend. And they're also expanding the number of international roster spots to 7 this year.
Yeah.
Which teams did not, I mean, I guess maybe they did know, but it wasn't public information until. And we'll look at the Spirits roster to break that down. I know they've got some room in that capacity as well.
Yeah.
I think they may only have four internationals, but I won't try to count them now as we're talking.
As we're talking on this show.
That's a high wire act that I don't want to do.
We'll definitely have some more content coming up. The Spirit previews, reviews. We're going to really try our best to keep that content train going for you guys. And you guys have been really liking the written stuff. So we're definitely going to keep that up. Let's talk a little bit. I want to touch a little bit on the Women's Gold Cup. Obviously, from a Spirit perspective, Trinity Rodman, of course, winning the Women's Gold Cup. Thought she played well. She started most of the games. She looked good. I wouldn't say this was like a, you know, pretty or dominant performance. I think from the U.S. women, the Colombia game was probably their best moment where they looked like they were themselves, so to speak, their dominant selves. The Canada game was an absolute mess. And this whole tournament, I think I've been annoyed. For me, I've been annoyed because the games have all been like at 10 p.m., which is annoying on the East Coast. I think it's great that this tournament exists. I think it should continue as kind of a way to bring in other, you know, bring in your South American teams, bring in, there needs to be more tournaments like this. I think the ultimate goal, I think, for FIFA should be to turn the Olympics back into a youth product, just like the men, and actually have enough capacity where you have these confederational tournaments and other things that you don't need the Olympics anymore. Because the Olympics has shown, you know, 18 players get called into that group. So it's a short roster. They've shown no signs of actually trying to increase that. So again, I think it would be something to look at. Maybe hopefully that might shift, to sort of how it is on the men's side. But, you know, I think overall, I think they got the win. I think that's probably the most important thing right now. Get some confidence back after the World Cup. I thought the Brazil game, I don't think either team played necessarily that well. I think, you know, the U.S. did a good job shutting him down. Nice goal from Lindsey Horan. They tried to play Rose Lavelle as a winger, which is never going to work. And I don't know if it's like a lot of experimenting. We'll see when Emma Hayes gets here. Maybe she has some different ideas. I think they use this tournament a lot as kind of a test bench for some ideas. Maybe they want to try at the Olympics. So I don't think the Olympics winning the Olympic gold again is the goal here. I think the goal here is to try to build a foundation at the Olympics, win it. If you win it, great. But if you're at least competitive, and then the real goal here is the World Cup is seemingly going to go to the U.S. and Mexico. That's your moment where I think you really want to have the strongest team out there. So,
Yep.
So,
Before we wrap up, I want to make sure I throw some spotlight on Loudoun United getting a extremely unlikely road point against San Antonio FC. They go down 1-0 on a pretty stupid mistake by their right back, whose name is unfortunately escaping me right now.
Go listen to Next in Line for
make sure you listen to Next in Line. I'm going to watch all these games though. That is my promise. That is my guaranteed promise. They are able to level the score right afterwards, but then unfortunately, former DC United player Cristiano Francois gets baited into a headbutt and gets red carded in the 30th minute. They are down a man for 60 minutes against San Antonio, who is one of the best teams in USL. Did they win the championship last year or the year before?
I think a year before, because I know Phoenix won it. It was Phoenix and Charleston in the
final. But a perennially hyper-competitive team with Juan Agudelo as a starting forward, and they were able to Florian Valo scores an equalizer in stoppage time on the road. If you have watched or paid any attention to Loudoun United over the last entire duration of their existence, gaining a point from behind in stoppage time on the road against elite opponents, not on the bingo card, not at all. So really, really great for them to get that point, sort of just christen the beginning of a team that's trying to turn things around. They are at home on Saturday against North Carolina FC. If you don't have tickets to go see the Miami game and you want to see soccer this weekend, I encourage you to go check that out. They appear to be the business, and it's great to have yet another competitive team to watch in the region. And they actually will be in the Open Cup, so there's that.
Yeah, there's that. They will be the only DMV. Well, I guess Nova is, I don't know. Christos maybe has a, but they're Baltimore. I was like, maybe Nova FC, were they in the Open Cup? Usually I know they're a
very early stage, the first, probably like the first or second round.
They might not, but they might not have qualified. I think they didn't qualify this time around. So yeah, really the only DMV resident, and then obviously the Richmond Kickers will be in it, but the only DMV resident in the Open Cup will be Loudoun United this year for reasons that are dumb and stupid, and we hate them. All right, folks, that's going to do it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, patreon.com/rcrewrefugees. We will probably have another Patreon show. We'll have another preview show. We'll be running out, so be on the lookouts for that. We'll have more content on the website, rcrewrefugees.com. Definitely check that out. And we are going to work our best to preview the Spirit season, review the Spirit game. We'll definitely do the blitzes, all that type of stuff. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next week. Vamos.
Vamos. Thank you for listening to RFK Refugees Podcast. Make sure you rate and review the show wherever you download podcasts. If you want to support the show, consider joining our Patreon or subscribing to our channel on Twitch. Lastly, make sure you're following us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, Twitch, Goals.tv, Friendster, MySpace, and Tumblr. Some of those are even real. Vamos.